Well, hello there, ladies and gents. It's good to see you again, and welcome back to Path to Abundant Living. I'm Ryan Ruff, your moderator, and as always, I'll be joined by the guys in Scott Morrison and Matt Nordman of Morrison Nordman Wealth Management. We're going to be getting into another great conversation today with one of our esteemed guests. Joining us on the show today is Shai Hardin. Shai is the owner and CEO of CyberProtect LLC. And if you guessed it already just by Shai's title, of course, we're going to be diving into the world of cybersecurity today. So many considerations and things to be on the lookout for here as we sit down to record today's episode in the year 2024. But my goodness, the world of cybersecurity is ever evolving, and it really pays to make sure you're up to snuff and following some best practices to ensure the optimal security for you, your company, and even your personal life. So before we bring Shai on and get into the nitty gritty, let's go ahead and say hi to the guys. Scott, Matt, good to see you this morning. How are we doing?
Ryan, great to see you again. Professor, how are you today?
Looking good, Matt. Thanks, Ryan. Good to see you.
It's feeling good, Lewis.
Well, guys, good to be back with you. You know, we've got an interesting guest and obviously the conversation on tap for our audience today with cybersecurity being at the forefront of it. But Matt, before we bring Shai out and get into everything, set the scene, if you will. How did you guys come across Shai Hardin and his team over at CyberProtect, and why'd you want to have him on today?
So I've seen a lot of stuff Shai has done online, and we all know that what you alluded to in the current environment we're in, how can we protect ourselves and what are all these threats that are out there and what should we be doing? I saw a story online, or my in-laws were watching a show, and his name's Andy Cohen, TV personality or whatever, seems like a pretty sharp guy. He came out and talked about how, and we'll get into the story a little bit, about how he was taken advantage of and lost a ton of money. And he's like, I'm a pretty smart guy. And I would like to think I'm pretty smart, at least in certain areas. And so how can we protect ourselves? Like you said, our businesses, our family, our friends, our parents as they age. And, it's a little scary at times. And I know Shai is the expert in this area. And we thought, well, if we're having these feelings, I imagine there's a lot of other people that are having them as well. And so what are some things that we should be aware of and some actionable steps that we can take away to say, okay, how can we protect ourselves even that much more? What's that extra layer that we can add into our own situation as well as our businesses?
Fantastic. Well, I've got my notepad handy here for my own personal benefit. But with that being said, let's go ahead and welcome Shai to the show. Shai, thank you so much for carving some time out of your busy schedule.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming on, Shai.
Thanks, Matt, for having me. Excited about this.
Yeah, we are very excited. So can you tell us your story? How do you get into the world of cybersecurity, IT, that whole thing? It's fascinating, as I tell people all the time, we're all smart. It's just in different areas. And because Mark Twain said, we're all ignorant, and I don't like to think I'm ignorant. And so I say, we're all smart. So tell us how you are so smart in this area. How'd you end up here?
Funny story. I didn't actually start out this way. I was actually going to college for secondary education to teach science or history. And one day I came home from college, and I was already married, and my wife said, Shai, what do you like to do? And I said, I like to play with my computer. She didn't preface it with anything. And she turned around and said, do that for a living. And ever since then, that's what I got into.
Wow, that's fantastic.
It was just that simple question that really did it. So that set me on my journey.
Okay. So then how do you end up, your wife, super supportive, says, go do that. And then you say, yeah, I love computers, so I'm going to do that. So then how do you then segue from that into being a cybersecurity expert?
Yeah. So after that semester, I changed my classes around, went into information technology, got my bachelor's in information technology. And before I even finished that, I started working for an MSP, or a managed service provider, and running out across the state of Michigan, fixing independent insurance companies' computers. That's how I started. And it was just that natural curiosity that I had about, I'm fixing things, but I always had a curiosity of how do I break the things too? So 23 years later, I had been working on the defensive side for a little while. I started out actually in red teaming, or the attack side for the good guys. So I worked for a computer security company and broke into hotels and credit unions, testing their security, mostly self-taught, just looking online, buying books, reading what other people did. Like Kevin Mitnick, he's a prolific hacker, phone hacker. And from there, broke into the computer security company that I worked at, with their permission. We always with someone's permission. Want to preface that. And from there, there's a gentleman there who was my boss. His name was Sean Bertrand, wonderful gentleman. And he said to me that one of the best compliments I ever got, he said, "I want to subscribe to your newsletter." And I thought that was just the greatest thing. And then just a few years ago, when getting ready to start Cyber Protect, friends of mine, one happened to own a home remodeling company, and another one dealt with Section 8 housing. And they were both hit with ransomware. And they reached out to me and I said, "Guys, you know I do this for a living." And so I started defending networks then. Yeah.
Wow. Shai, obviously in our business, in the, selling securities, one of the very first questions we ever get from a prospective client is about the security of their, their financials. Our industry has certainly raised the bar year after year after year, in regards to cybersecurity, and yet there are still overwhelming attempts from the broker-dealer side of things, our own personal computers. Obviously, our clients, receive all kinds of emails and not really sure, are constantly calling our office about, what to act on, what not to act on. Can you tell us what, the statistics are in terms of just the number of bad actor groups that are out there that we're trying to fend off every day?
The number is growing constantly. Deloitte, most of your people probably know them, said there's somewhere around 150 APT, Advanced Persistent Threat groups, like nation state groups, attacking everybody from mom and pops to people's personal accounts to businesses and governmental entities. And there's about, at the last count, I want to say about 48 known ransomware gangs. But that doesn't include the number of clandestine groups that we don't know or haven't discovered yet.
So with that amount, and like you said, growing, I don't want to say exponentially, but it sounds like it, how do we know who to trust? So that the Andy Cohen story, right? He loses his debit card, finds and gets an email from his bank. He's like, "I deal with the bank all the time through email." Emails back and forth. Well, come to find out, they have now not only forwarded his voicemail or his phone, so forwarded his phone calls, now they're basically taking withdrawals from his account, and his bank is trying to get a hold of him. So how do we know who to trust in situations like this?
That's a really hard question to answer. If we start off with the major antivirus companies, the hardware manufacturers, people like yourselves, we're all trying to do the best job that we can do. Our job is to reduce risk to as close to zero as possible. But does zero risk actually in cybersecurity exist? No, it doesn't. I can't tell any of my clients we will be 100% safe. There's just no such thing. These companies have teams of people looking at cybersecurity issues every day. Some go as far as offering bug bounties, which is money that they give to researchers to discover new innovative ways of breaking their security. But if you're talking about local companies, local IT people, you have to look at their reputation. You have to look at their skill set. The difference between my company and some other companies, we are a cybersecurity first company. We've actually been out there testing security, breaking into things, and then protecting clients. Lastly, you need to know how personable they are. And why does that even come into play? How personable? You might think, who cares? They have to have an open mind. They can't be rigid and hard set into thinking that they've got the solution. They may have some good ideas how to protect you. The industry as a whole for finance does a really good job at compliance and making people like yourselves, my clients, meet their standard. But we got to remember that compliance really is just a minimum standard. At the end of the day, you could spend an infinite amount of money protecting yourself. Could somebody get in? The old saying goes, the bad guys, only need to get it. You need to find one security flaw, but the good guys need to patch 10,000.
What are the actionable steps that our clients in particular can take? Because most of they don't have the resources that we have from the industry perspective, as far as, going to how many different links to try to protect ourselves or protect the industry, protect clients' accounts. But from the client's perspective, what are those things that they can do, that top of the list kind of stuff to be aware of?
Yeah, the first thing they want to do, which is not even technological, is to put a credit freeze on Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, and their little brother, Innovis. So apply for the credit freeze. It'll stop people from opening up credit in your name or even inquiring about your credit, and it's free. The best part, you can thaw your credit when you want to use it. I've had the thought to change banks, and I just asked the bank who they checked the credit through. They let me know who it was. I went and put a thaw on there, and then afterwards, it refreezes automatically. So somebody trying to open up accounts in your name will be hit with a really good roadblock if you go and put a credit freeze on. Secondly, don't trust anybody, especially if they're calling you out of the blue or sending you an email. Nobody should be calling you, asking you personal information, social security numbers, bank account numbers. If you're not sure about an email, a phone call, call the bank yourself or call your financial people or whoever the company is that you're dealing with and you're worried about. When in doubt, go with your gut. You're probably right. And you know what? At the end of the day, when you call your bank, when you call your financial advisor, and you say, hey, I got this email, and they say, yes, that was us. There's nothing to worry about. They think that you're smart for doing this, protecting you, protecting them also. So technologically speaking, would be the next thing to do. Have a computer, have antivirus on it, keep it up to date, run the patches. Yeah.
Okay. So real quick, with the credit freeze, is this something where we just go to their websites to set that up?
It is. Yeah, you can just go to the websites for, again, there are more credit bureaus than the big three and their little brother. There's little tiny ones out there. But they're not used. They're usually niche markets. So you want to go to Experian's website, Equifax, TransUnion, and Innovis. You want to get an account. They're free. If they're asking you for money, that's not what you want. The government states that you are allowed a free account, and you are 100% allowed to freeze your credit. And it's not going to hurt you at all. I've got a good credit score. I pay all my bills on time. So that's all good. It's just when someone's going to try to steal your identity, open up accounts in your name, open up credit in your name, or even just do a search on you, that they're not going to come up with anything. And that's really what you want at the end of the day.
Okay. And so next step, we do that. So what is, because Scott and I talk about this in the office, we spend, and we believe probably a lot of people do, updating passwords, changing passwords, forgot password, go password reset. So what is a good password policy, and should we use the biometrics and two-factor authentication and, you know, those kinds of things?
Good password policy. Okay, we're gonna flip that a little bit.
Okay.
Passwords in general are dead. Okay. We don't want a password with 8 characters and uppercase and lowercase and numbers and symbols and your astrological sign and everything else. We want to look at pass phrases. Okay. A phrase of 16 characters. Remember Bugs Bunny back in the day? Which way did he go, George?
Yep.
Something easy to remember. You can put punctuation in there. You can make it long. You can put spaces, and it's complex that somebody's not going to guess it. So use something that means something to you. So we start off with, you know, a passphrase. So passwords are dead. And then we look at, you know, using a different password for every single site that you log into. Never use the same password twice. If you do, and the bad guys discover your email and your password, they will do something called credential stuffing, which is they will run some code or an automated script that goes out to the websites, a bunch of different ones, and tries your credentials in every website, and they're hoping to strike gold, and sometimes they will.
Okay, good to know. So if we have been notified of a breach, you know, we get the letter in the mail that says, oh, your information, your PII, personal identifiable information, has been released, and you can sign up for this 1 year of credit monitoring. Should we do that? Does that matter? Or is it the information's out there and it's more important to update usernames and passwords?
Some of your information is out there, right? If you've received notification of a data breach, that bit of information is out there. So it, could it be your name, your address, your social security number? Yes, it could be. Should we change those passwords? Yes, we should change that password. Another thing we should do is use a password manager, okay? And in that password manager, you only have to remember the master password to get into that password manager. And then inside of there, you store all your passwords. It's encrypted. You store all your recovery keys, because a lot of times when you go to those sites, they'll give you a recovery key, a string of numbers and letters and characters that's really long. It's impossible to guess, but allows you to get back in. PIN numbers. You can store in there. You can store security questions. I typically do not use the real security questions. So when somebody asks you for a security question for maybe your HSA, and it says, what's your mother's maiden name? I will make it up and put it in my password database. And that way, it's not the same as another one if somebody ever gets it. But I have it at the tips of my fingers. I've got that information, but nobody else does. I happen to like a tool called Bitwarden. They're an open source web-based password manager, and they use a third party to audit them. that's why I happen to really like them. And they have all those features built in, and it's literally dollars, single digit dollars a month.
How? So, I don't know if, and this is real quick, I don't know if you saw the new Mission Impossible movie with Dead Reckoning. Okay.
No, it's, no, I didn't.
It's all about how AI is going to rule the world, right? It's taking over, which can be very helpful in a lot of areas, but then some other areas, if you watch this, you're like, we should probably be concerned. And I know it's Hollywood and movies, but how concerned should we be about the bad actors really ramping up using AI?
Oh, very concerned.
Okay.
There is a term coined a few years back called adversarial AI or adversarial artificial intelligence. Nation state actors are already working on AI tools to automate attacks. Basically, just point it someplace, tell it to attack, and it starts poking all the little holes, trying to find out how to get in. So we're going to be coming out with what security companies are doing is a defensive AI.
And
so Shai, going back to the password policy a little bit, for my own personal frustration, when you talk about coming up with a phrase that only I would know, but if I have 200 passwords to 200 different companies, how do I come up with 200 phrases? Or is it some very, you know, like I said, you don't want it to just be a variation off the same phrase, because
right,
that's too easy to guess. So, and you know, a password manager obviously is someplace where you can store all this stuff to be able to access it. But how do you go about coming up with the phrases that you can readily remember for each and every site you're visiting?
Scott, that is, it's a very simple question, but it's a genius question too. So the passphrase, what I would like you to do is develop a passphrase. And that's the one phrase that you remember that locks your password database. Then you use the tool, like I mentioned, there's a bunch of them. There's Bitwarden, there's KeyPass, there's, you know, 1Pass, there's 100 different password managers out there. But you remember that one passphrase, just the one, that gets you into your password manager. And you can let the password manager and its settings choose the passwords for you. At that point, it doesn't matter. It will choose by default a large number of characters, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, symbols. And you can actually go into the settings and make those more difficult if you like, or less. I probably would never go under 12 characters. But letting the password manager develop those passwords. I've been using a password manager for years, and I know, you know, a handful of passwords right now that get me into my most key things. Besides that, everything else is in my password database.
Okay.
All right. So how do we protect parents or grandparents, right, who, I don't want to say didn't grow up, because we didn't grow up on using computers as much, but I'd like to think we're a little more advanced. But for someone, I think of my in-laws, right, they're 87 years old, and they accidentally click on the thing, or they get the email that says, hey, your Amazon account has been hacked. And they're like, oh, should we be concerned? It's like, well, no, you shouldn't be concerned because you don't have an Amazon account. But you know, they don't necessarily remember that. And so what's the best way to protect, you know, our parents, our grandparents, or, you know, I don't want to say older, more seasoned people?
Well, the only really computer that's safe is the one that you unplugged and you leave on the side of the floor with an armed guard in front of it, really. But that's not very useful. So the first thing we need to do is educate ourselves. When we educate ourselves, we become more powerful. We're in the know. The problem is when you don't know what you don't know. So we should be, talking to our parents. Parents need to be a little open-minded sometimes. My mother was very open-minded because I happened to be in the field, so she would listen to me. And I would give her little tiny things when I talked to her about, hey, something I just read of a scam or something that was coming out. But there's also like with emails a lot of times and phone calls, especially emails, there's a SLAM method, S-L-A-M. So we look at the S is for sender. We look at the sender, look at the email address that something's coming from. The L is for links. Now don't click on the link, but if you hover your mouse over a link in Outlook or on a web browser, on the bottom left-hand side, it'll tell you where that link is going to. And most likely it doesn't look like your bank or your financial advisor or any of the accounts that you're trying to log into. So that's another tip. There's A for attachments. Never open attachment from someone you didn't know was sending you something or you didn't expect. There are even tools online where you can go to a web browser, say, open PDF online in Google. There's a bunch of sites and you can load that PDF into your web browser from there and open that PDF safely where it can't infect you, even if it was riddled with malware. And the last letter for SLAM is M, the message. Phishing emails have become more sophisticated over the years, especially with artificial intelligence and non-native speakers trying to trick us. But a lot of times the message that they're conveying is a dead giveaway. A phishing email contains a generic greeting, misspellings, grammatical errors, strange wording that doesn't sound conversational or professional. So we shouldn't trust those.
So if I get an email from the deposed prince of Nigeria, I should be concerned if he's asking for money.
Yeah, I've tried to get money out of that Nigerian prince over and over again, but it's just not paid up.
Okay. So you had mentioned it like when talking with in the past with your mom, you had said, hey, I read something about the next new scam. Well, how can we find out about the next new scam?
Sure. So there's tons of ways to find out about the next new scam. It can be information overload. Some of the easy ways are the Federal Trade Commission alerts, FTC alerts. If you just Google that, go to the Federal Trade Commission's website, put your email address in, and they will send you scam warnings. Fraud.org is another one. And again, put your email address in there. You can get fraud warnings. State of Michigan, Michigan.gov, has a link for consumer protection scams right on their website that they can update you. And one of my favorite is Bleeping Computer. That's Bleeping, computer, computer.com. They're a great site for information about all the biggest scams that's going on. For some of your older clients, the credit bureaus, if you did sign up to them, they do send out stuff when they get wind of it. Your bank does sometimes, if they have your email address. And I know AARP does also.
Okay. So let's say the worst happens and there's a breach. What are the first three things that we should be doing if there's been a breach?
Well, first thing, of course, that you should have already done, not even the top three, is put that credit freeze in there, right? So that goes without saying.
Right.
But you go and you change your password, you change your PIN numbers, in case the bad guys have access to some of your data. You place a fraud alert, if possible, on your credit. You notify your financial institutions, your insurance company, if you pay for cyber insurance, you that identity theft provider, you're going to go ahead and notify them. So those are the top three. And if it's a local thing that has happened to you, which usually is not, usually it's somebody in, you know, we're in Michigan here, maybe, you know, I've had it from North Carolina myself. They did not get in, but I got a fraud alert from Bank of America saying, you know, a couple of years ago, somebody's been trying to charge something in the Carolinas. And they said, was this you? And I clicked no. And as a side note, inside of your banking website, when you log in, a lot of them offer notifications. You can set a notification to, if money was withdrawn from your account over a certain dollar amount, I literally got mine set to $10. If something happens on my account over $10, I get an email about it and I know about it right then and there, and I get a text message.
Extremely helpful.
Yeah, that's very helpful. What is it, do you recommend one browser over another?
Browsers are pretty good. The big ones were, you know, Microsoft Edge and Google Chrome. Chrome was eating Microsoft Edge's lunch for years. And Microsoft said, we're going to drop the engine and just get rid of our engine that runs our browser, and we're going to use Chrome. So Google Chrome and Microsoft Edge both use the same browser engine. Brave browser is also another one. It's fast, but it does have its own security concerns. But if you look at Microsoft Edge right now, their smart screen is doing a better job of protecting your data than Google's Safe Search is on Chrome. That being said, Brave, Edge, Chrome, all the browsers, if you're getting something for free, how are they making money? Advertisements. If you don't know how they're making money, you are how they're making money. They anonymize your data, they sell it to advertising companies, and they put cookies on your machine to hopefully entice you to buy the camper or that new sweater or something like that. So my thing is, you go with Edge or go with Chrome. I do like those, but Edge right now is beating out Chrome.
Hey, Shai, quick question for you. There's a really popular additional browser for a lot of the Mac users out there is Safari, because it's Apple's and it's baked right there into the computer. What's your take security wise on Safari? Because I know that's a pretty popular browser out there as well.
Yeah, Safari. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, Safari is the way to go. Apple does a good job of securing their products. Are they the end all be all of security? Definitely not. They hold such a small market share compared to Windows machines across the globe that if I'm a bad guy, I'm not really that concerned about Apple, because I can put out an attack and maybe hit a few hundred people or a few thousand people. But if I attack a Windows-based operating system, where I'm going fishing, the pool is a lot greater. So it's not so much really high-end security. It's a slightly more security through obscurity. But they do patch their stuff. They are looking for bug bounties. They're trying to keep their stuff up to date. So Apple is pretty secure. Do you need an antivirus product? They have their own that they don't talk about that's built in that scans your phones, scans your tablets, scans your computer, and tries to keep you clean. But there are tools out there that have bypassed all of Mac's defenses.
That's good to know, especially from the hacker's side of things. The juice might not be necessarily worth the squeeze on the Mac side of things. So thanks for clearing that up. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, because there's been a big push publicly to get people to go to DuckDuckGo, and I know that so that, like you had said, hey, the others they're selling your information to try to get you to buy stuff. And DuckDuckGo is supposedly saying, hey, we're not going to sell your information. How's their level of security compared to the others?
I have not done an in-depth analysis on DuckDuckGo in particular. But again, with DuckDuckGo, how do they make their money? They're giving you something for free on your side, and no business can stay alive on an absolutely free model. So they're probably not selling your data. They're making it anonymous, bundling it with a lot of other people, and then selling that data. Sending you ads that are in their ecosystem. But unfortunately, I've not done an in-depth analysis of their particular platform.
You mean you don't know everything about the internet? That's crazy.
Nobody does. You know, we all have our niches, right? We're all about something, like you said.
This has been fascinating. One final question from me is, should we be using a VPN, the virtual private network? Like, do you recommend that?
If it's a company VPN, yes, 100%. There's other tools that are VPN-like for companies that I recommend using. Now, a normal VPN, I don't want to say any names. Some I don't trust after reading their terms of service. There's some popular ones out there that say, you know, hey, we're security. You have to come out the other end to your banking account or your financial advisor or whoever you're doing business with, and giving out your credit card information. Say you're buying tickets for Disney and you're using your VPN. Sure, you're anonymous from your computer to their network, but when you log into Disney's website to book your trip, they know who you are because you're logging in with your contact information. So can you only be so anonymous? Yes. Do some VPN providers who provide filtering, anonymity, and malware protection do a good job? They do a good job. Does anybody do a perfect job? Not at all. Nobody can do a perfect job. It's, again, we're not going to get that risk to zero. So does it help? Yes. But at the end of the day, who are you trying to block out? Myself, do I care if Google knows that I was looking for a new shaver? No, I really don't care. That's the least of my worries if I have anything to worry about. When I'm going to a website and putting in my credit card information, I know that the site I'm looking to see if it's secure. I look to see if it's a trusted site. I don't use a debit card. I use a credit card. Therefore, I can get my money back in case something bad happens. So I'm not so worried about it. And I'm using a computer that I know has protection. One of my clients, who's a law firm, recently told me their accounting people all come into the office to do their personal banking because they trust those machines that CyberProtect secures. And from there, do we use a VPN? No, we don't. But we put all the steps in place to make sure that they're secure, that they're actually going to the websites that they are meaning to go to.
Okay. Well, this is fascinating. And as scary as it is, you have made it less scary to know that there are things that we can be proactively doing. First and foremost is putting that credit freeze on right away. And that will help protect us or anybody that we know to a very high level that, yes, all these other things might occur, but most importantly, they're not going to be taking out accounts in our name.
Yeah. And I don't want people to think that credit monitoring is a bad thing, but credit monitoring works after the fact. After you've already been compromised, then they alert you. So go out there, spend the little, you know, the one morning and sign up for those credit freezes.
And you have to do it at each of them, correct? You can't do it one. It doesn't automatically transfer to the others.
Right. They're separate companies.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate your time. I know that I'm sure you've helped a ton of people and businesses and will continue. And I know this information is extremely helpful, selfishly, like Scott was saying earlier, to me and my family, as well as all of our clients. So thank you.
Shai, I want to thank you for coming on. How would somebody contact you if they were interested in your services?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, cyberprotectllc.com. And right from there, there is there's our phone number. We have an 800 or a local number. We also have a way to fill out your contact information if you want to get an email from us, or if you want to get on our mailing list. And we do non-salesy mailing lists where we tell you how to protect yourselves different ways, you know, scams at Valentine's Day, scams at Christmas. If there's a natural disaster going on, we'll say, hey, worry about the Red Cross scams out there. And we kind of try to put information out there. Yeah.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, Shai Harden there joining us. Of course, Shai being the owner and CEO of Cyber Protect LLC. Super, super glad you could spend some time with us this morning. I know I learned a lot, but Scott and Matt, what were some of your big takeaways from today's conversation?
Well, as scary as it all is, there are things that we can do, like Shai said, to reduce the risk, because there is nothing in life that we can eliminate risk 100% from, as far as we've seen. And so in this instance, with everything that's out there, and technology is fantastic, but also we need to be careful, right? It's like, you can't drive 100 miles an hour down the road. You have to be careful. And so this is, to me, this is no different. And getting some of those things, like right away, go and sign up for a credit freeze, right? I mean, that seems so simple, and that's gonna all of a sudden put a wall up pretty high for someone to get over, that they're going to most likely move on to somebody else. And so right away, like, that's a simple thing that we can all do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if anything, one of the things that motivated us behind having Shai on was giving people a resource, and one that we trust, one that our clients can trust. And so with that contact information, you know, I would encourage anybody to reach out to Shai and his team, you know, because it's one thing to go out there on the internet and just start Googling questions and wondering whether or not you're just inviting more problems than you're solving. And to be able to have, you know, somebody in the business of cybersecurity that, you know, we've vetted out and know, you know, can provide the kind of security you're really looking for, might definitely be worth that contact.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was really, I mean, so many great points out of Shai today. One in particular that I kind of honed in on was surrounding, actually, I guess two things. It was a little encouraging to hear that, you know, your Google Chromes, your Safari, if you're a Mac user, Microsoft Edge, all do a pretty great job in terms of filtering out malware and giving us a level of security to be able to browse the internet. So that was a nice jumping off point to know that, whoa, if you're using this browser, you should think twice. So that was nice to know that the large majority of folks out there, whether they're using one of those three browsers I just mentioned, they're starting on the right foot, shall we say. But it was really interesting to also hear him, as we, you know, it was one of our final questions, talking about the, you know, using a virtual private network or a VPN, while it's not necessarily a false sense of security that a VPN does in store. It does offer value, but let's just say after today's conversation with Shai, it's good to know that it does some, but not all, essentially, of the protection that you should kind of concern yourself with. So really, at the end of the day, you can take smart steps, you can protect yourself, but it comes back to, Matt, your point you just made, and that's and of course that Shai reiterated today is that idea of just exponentially decreasing risk. Because if you can do that, somebody else is easier pickings for the bad actors, and they're going to just move on quickly. And that's I think kind of a bottom line, if you will, from today's conversation. But Matt and Scott, I know, I mean, you guys are, you know, you are business owners. You have your own security situations to deal with, you know, for that of your own entity, but of course that of your clients. For anybody out there that, you know, is scratching their head or enlightened even by the conversation and would love to talk to you guys and your team about that intersection of security and finances and just a private life, really at the end of the day, what would be the best way somebody could open up a dialogue with you guys and chat about this?
Sure. The traditional way, 517-333-7967, or go to our website, Morrison Nordman, two N's on the end of Nordman.com. And you can go click on there and schedule a get to know you call with myself or with Scott.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you guys carving some time out of your schedule and look forward to being back on the next one with you.
Ryan, as always, great to see you and great conversation, Scott. See you soon.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, guys. And hey, folks, we're going to take a final moment here and thank you for stopping by and being with us on the podcast today. If you enjoyed today's discussion, you learned a thing or two from Shai Harden. I know I did. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on whichever platform you checked us out on today so that you don't miss out on other great conversations like this. You know, of late, we've been bringing on some great guests from Matt and Scott's professional network and trying to bring a new sense of value to you, you know, at these different intersections of wealth and life. Today was wealth and security. We're excited to bring another conversation to you guys here soon. But for Scott and Matt, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long today, but we appreciate you once again being with us on Path to Abundant Living. Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors. Morrison Nordman and Associates and Securities America are separate entities. All investing involves risk, including the possible risk of principal.